n'ont changé. Ils n'ont changé. Hello, it's my talk with you.
Fred, hello, how are you?
Hello, Tim. How are you?
I'm okay. I know you're sick. I don't know why I say, how are you, when I know that you're just...
well, I'm on the mend.
Oh, good.
I had a very nasty cold that started in my throat and back of my nose and then developed into this awful
cough. The details are not that interesting.
The details. I can tell you about the mucus and... But my voice is still a bit funny, so that's why I sound a bit funny.
All righty. All right, what a new week. And what have you been listening to?
Tim, I went on that road trip with my friend that we talked about in episode 3.
Yeah.
So it was a quiet trip. And so there was 6 days of no music, basically. But then I had to rush because I had to write a piece. I'm doing a stupid thing. Is I have it's not a column, it's a series for a Dutch magazine about American hardcore punk from the 1980s. And when you have a cold, it's the last thing you want to listen to. But I chose a band called The Descendants. And the good thing about The Descendants, they had some very short songs. And maybe we can play one of their tunes.
Yeah, okay. This is a history for us. We're playing the entire song. Here it is.
It's called Entire like Song. That was it.
You get the point. The message comes across very clearly.
Okay, you hear the rest of the lyrics? I can't, but they,
well, no,
on that
but,
album,
I mean, the
they have
that he likes food.
He likes food. Who needs food? They have another song on the same, I think it was the EP, which is 11 seconds.
So that's a long song.
This one. This was one of the longer ones. And there's a song on one of their later albums that is exactly 2 seconds. It's called All. And they all shout All and play one chord. So they're like, All! That's it. That's the song. It must be the shortest song. This apparently was the fastest punk song ever recorded or something.
Oh, really? Okay.
But yeah, no, they're a funny band. They are the ones who started the whole punk pop thing before Green Day and all those bands came around.
Oh, okay.
But they never got the credit that they deserved.
They deserve it. Yeah. It's funny how very odd bands sometimes set a trend and then disappear.
No, they're still around.
Oh, are they? Okay.
They are.
Excellent. Short concerts,
no,
obviously.
Still...
but
no, they. The first album had 15 songs, and the whole album lasted 20 minutes. So that's...
Okay.
Count. You do your maths, and you get to the average.
Right.
I think one song was over 2 minutes. The rest were all 1 minute or less than 1 minute.
Okay.
But they still... The problem for them was... Their first album was called Milo Goes to College. And Milo was the singer. And Milo went to college, studied biochemistry or something, and gave up the band for a while. So while this type of music developed, they couldn't play because Milo had gone to college. And then Milo came back. And then they recorded another album. But then Milo started doing all sorts of difficult research. So... they never got the credit that they should have had because of that bloody Milo. Now, biochemical engineer.
Was the song called when he came back? Was the song called Milo Comes Back from College?
No, they had a song called Descendants in which they tell Milo that they forgive him for not staying with the band for that time and all that. Have you been listening to?
I've been listening to the most obvious album. And I would feel embarrassed about presenting it on this podcast of ours, but you wrote an extraordinarily long and detailed piece about this artist, which I thought was actually pretty good. Here's the song. See if you can recognize it.
Oh.
but you come pour some sugar on me, honey, too. It's a real live boogie and a real live hold down. Don't be a bitch, come take it to the floor now. Woo!
Yeah, we all know who that was, eh?
Yeah. So this is Beyoncé Carter, and I think it's actually appropriate for you right now because it does have this part where she goes, choo! So you could sneeze in time to the song.
The coughing now, so it's too late.
Okay, so it's not too late for Steve. All right. I must say, I'm a big admirer of Beyoncé, like everybody on the planet Earth. But I thought this album was just fabulous. She stepped into a new territory, presented it fantastically. The variety of songs on it was just great. It was very exceptional in music interpretation and understanding. Great songs, fantastic, bringing sort of some pretty well-known artists up with her. Just tick, tick, tick. It's all good.
She subverted the genre.
Yeah, and the song made it to this song made it to the top of the country charts, as well as, of course, being on top of the Billboard charts. This is incredible. If you look at the Billboard charts now, almost every single one of those songs is on the charts somewhere. And it's a long album with lots of songs on it.
Yeah, I know. But like 7 songs are topping the charts. Yeah.
But tell the story about the clawhammer banjo player on that track. I think it was so fascinating.
Rhiannon Giddens. Yeah. I interviewed her back in 2021, I think. And I was talking about how country music and folk music has its black roots. And she's done extensive research into that. And so we talked about that. And I said, isn't it fighting against the bigger forces and you'll never be able to really bring the point across that this has black roots as well, this country music, Irish and Scottish, obviously, but also black. And she said, maybe one day Beyoncé will involve me in doing research and make me play a clawhammer banjo on one of her hit songs, and then things will change. And of course, it had been happening. She had been doing that, but she didn't want to tell me that she had been doing that. She told me in a very circumvent way, and I would have had the biggest scoop on the planet, the music scoop. And later, because I was rereading this interview, and I thought, geez, you were talking about that particular song. You were already 2-3 years ago recording and working on that song and working on that whole concept of that album, you naughty little thing. And anyway, so it was a nice little way to end my story, but I didn't give it a thought.
But was she actually, do you know for sure that she was working with Beyoncé at the time on that song?
I would think, otherwise it would be too much of a coincidence. Doing
this quite a long time ago, it's 3 years ago, right?
3 years ago, yeah, but 27 songs on that album. And Beyoncé must have had an idea like, this is what I want to do next. So she must have employed her and asked her to start doing the research and how she can incorporate that into the music. And now I'm pretty sure it was happening. Otherwise, she would be like the perfect fortune teller, which she might be. You know, it could be, but there were 3 elements in that interview, in that quote, that all worked out she was going to do it.
Yeah, clawhammer country music, and working. Amazing. I'm sorry about your scoop, but I don't think she wanted you to go out there and say
that Beyoncé's next album will be about country. That would have been scoop.
I don't think that's what she intended, so it's not your fault. What do you make of the politics of this all? Do you like the idea of an R&B singer like Beyoncé genre hopping in this way?
Yeah, I do. There's hardly any country on the album, actually, if you listen to it. There's a lot of R&B, there's gospel, there's even a sort of rock track, I think it's called.
Yeah.
But I think anybody can use anything they want for their music, can't they? It's a free world. And she's born in Texas. Her mother was from Louisiana, her father from Alabama, or the other way around. So she certainly has the roots, and she knows what it's like to live there and to grow up there and to be in the Deep South or have parents from the Deep South. So in terms of credibility, I think she's definitely there, and she must have listened to a lot of that music when she was young, so I have absolutely no problem with that.
I think it's great. I think it pulls country music slightly more into the mainstream, and I've always thought that American country music is just fabulous.
But the other way around, a lot of those new country stars use hip-hop influences in their country music. It's obvious that it will work the other way around as well.
Yes, exactly. And it is a bit of a flexible category now anyway. You know, a lot of the songs on the top of the country charts are also duplicate on the main chart. But the first time I visited the States, I was just astounded at just the sheer quality. The songs are incredibly well written. The production values are excellent. They are very catchy, lots of hooks in them, and much better than the very stylized kind of country that you get to hear outside of the States. If you're listening to country music in South Africa, it's actually a different kind of country music. It's not the same sort of thing at all. Anyway, there was a whole bunch of artists who were enormous in the States, enormous, who I'd never heard of.
It's the second biggest selling genre in America after hip-hop. And it's always been. And it's got its own infrastructure and multi-billion industry. The bits I don't like is when the sort of right-wingers start appropriating country, like Jason Aldean, those guys, and make it into something politically quite ugly.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think Beyonce's role in that process now is pretty good, because she's in some way, in a certain sense, she is reclaiming country music.
Oh, she is. And I find the cover absolutely fascinating. The cover of the shot with her on a horse sideways, dressed in cowboy gear, wearing a blonde wig, and holding the American flag. But all the stars are out of sight. So you get a sort of half American flag, like a damaged American flag, which I thought was quite interesting as a statement. I don't know what she meant with it, but it is an interesting statement.
Wow, Fred, that's a very observant. It's possible the flag was just hanging that way.
No, you can see it's cut there, and it's, check it out.
Okay, very acute. Okay, so now on to our podcast topic. This is your idea. Just tell us what it's about and why.
No, it was your idea, Tim.
Oh, okay. It's my idea.
I don't mind explaining.
Let's be clear about your idea. So the idea was, what songs should you play in order to clear out a restaurant or a bar? At some point, the owner of the bar or the restaurant thinks, enough's enough. I've got to get these people out of here. I want to go home. All the staff want to go home. And it really came up because I was at a restaurant and the owner of the restaurant put on Dire Straits. And
that's me out.
So they put on Sultans of Swing, and I don't know how many times I've heard Sultans of Swing, but it's a lot, and it's enough now. So even though I really do like Dire Straits, it cleared me out. Anyway, so it's a bit of a broad topic, because we're not clear about whether or not it's a bar or a restaurant. And actually, those two might be different.
I'll tell you about my interpretation just now, yeah.
Okay, let's listen to your first song, because this song will definitely clear anybody out of any bar or any restaurant. Take a listen. The melodic quality of that is just excellent. You
can, and the harmonies.
I think I'd really want to stay. The harmonies, the lyrics.
It was Einstürzende Neubauten from Berlin.
Yes.
I think it's called Steh auf, I think is the track. You know why I chose it? Obviously you do. But I've decided to split this into three parts. One is clear your house out when you have a party and you want people to go home.
Right.
And this song will, as you say, will work for everything. But the second song will be about clear out a restaurant. And the third one will be about clear out the dance floor.
Okay.
Or the other way around. We'll see. But I used to be married, and my ex-wife's father, so my ex-father-in-law, had his own tune to clear out a party. he went to brush his teeth in the kitchen, which was adjacent to the living room. So everybody could see the man starting to brush his teeth. And that meant, guys, party's over. Now, I was thinking about sometimes you have people in the house and they don't want to go and they want another glass and another glass. And they get a bit excited and they get excited about your music as well. So I thought this is something people will say, what the hell is that? What do these guys do and what do they sing about and what instruments do they use? So right. It's a hard one, but I think this will do the job. It's like, it's barely listenable, isn't it? It's like they use instruments made out of things they found on rubbish piles and they use scissors, circle saws and stuff like that. And they bang on things and they use a distorted microphone and they scream and shout. I think it was a call for uprising in the 80s when you had all the big squatter riots in places like Berlin. And he played in Battery 9, was an industrial band from Johannesburg. Right. And he was once stopped by the cops. There was in the early 90s. He'd been to my place. I lived near Pretoria and he drove back to Joburg. Stopped by the cops and he had the Einstürzende Neubauten CD or a cassette tape in his car, loud. And he opened the window and he said, the guy said, okay, you can drive, go, bye-bye. So it does work. But I actually really like them. I think they're one of my favorite bands. I thought they were extraordinary. They done stuff nobody had ever done before.
Yeah, because this is part of the problem is that they are so weird that there is a chance that they will start a whole new conversation.
Exactly, yeah, that's the problem.
Then you could say to them, okay, let's put on the second track.
Yes, and the fifth album. You can hear that they mellowed out a bit.
All right, let me tell you about my first song, which is very obvious. It's called Closing Time. And the intention is that you get the hint, right? And not only is it closing time in which the song title suggests what you should be doing, it's also Leonard Cohen. And according to my wife, there's actually no Leonard Cohen song that won't work. And strangely enough, this song it's annoying even for a Leonard Cohen song. But you know what the irony is? The irony is that the lyrics in the song are just fabulous. Just fabulous. Can I just read you some of the lyrics? Because you can't quite hear them very clearly. It says, we're drinking and
can
dancing.
Can I read you the Neubauten lyrics then as well?
No.
Okay.
No, I was actually interested in what the Neubauten means. I should have asked you. Anyway, all right, you go ahead and tell us about the lyrics.
Collapsing buildings. That's what it means. No, I won't read you. It's a call to arms for Berlin squatters and stuff. Stay off, Berlin. You go ahead.
Okay. So the lyrics are, we're drinking and we're dancing and there's nothing really happening and the place is dead as heaven on a Saturday night. And I get my very close companion, gets me fumbling, gets me laughing. She's 100, but she's wearing something tight. And I lift my glass to the awful truth, which you can't reveal to the ears of youth, except to say it isn't worth a dime. The rhythm of the lyrics is just fabulous. Here's the song.
Yeah, yeah.
And every drinker, every dancer lives a happy feast to think of. The fiddler fiddles something so sublime. All the women tear their blouses off, and the men they dance on the polka dots. And his partner found, and his partner lost, and it's hell to pay when the fiddler stops. It's closing time.
It's from the future.
That's right. Sorry, I beg your pardon. But, you know, it's got quite a beat to it for Leonard Cohen songs. But it does have that very irritating, squawky, I think they fiddles, I would guess. But I think that would do it.
I was never so keen on those background vocals.
He had to have them because wasn't he having an affair with one of them?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. But he had them a lot in that second phase. And sometimes it didn't work for me, but it's a good song. I think it will do the job. But for you, it's for everything. It's the house, the restaurant, and the nightclub.
Yeah. But no.
Okay.
All right, so we've done the house for you, and now we're on the restaurant.
Oh, no, we go to the nightclub.
Oh, now we're in the nightclub. Okay.
Yeah, here, we're in the nightclub. Well, that was the Sex Pistols.
Yeah. I'm doing a cover version, which is like really strange.
Yeah, they had a few covers. Eh? They did No Fun of the Sex Pistols. And they had Substitute by The Who, they did. And right. I'm Not Your Stepping Stone. But this was after Johnny Rotten had left and they still had to make some money. And Sid actually does the job very well as a singer, I think.
It's obviously, the snare and the discordant and the frantic bash.
The words a bit.
I mean,
a few swear words in there now.
I didn't understand clearly, maybe you can clarify this, whether the song was meant ironically or whether it was a statement. Was he saying to the world, I did it my way? Or was he saying, listen to this horrible song by this Frank Sinatra and isn't that awful? And let's just destruct this whole notion, which is imbued with arrogance and self-importance.
I don't know. I'm not sure whose idea it was. It may have been Malcolm McLaren's idea to have a cover of sort of, I won't say corny, but a song that's like a standard and does have an appeal. And I think the lyrics did appeal to him, the way he interprets them, and he makes them sound his. And then if you know what happened next, you think, okay, it makes sense. You did it your way. You killed yourself, you killed your girlfriend.
Yes, that's very unique, very unusual.
But sometimes I was in a club that was in the 80s or something, and they did play this towards the end, because it starts with this sort of half-drunken him starting to sing the words to My Way, and then they turn into that punky beat. But it is, guys, we're all drunk, it's time to go home. It's that kind of song. And can I read you something? Because your man, he comes back in everything now, in all my three songs, or two of my three songs. He didn't comment on Einstürzende Neubaute. But Leonard Cohen, he said, he liked Sid's My Way. He said, I never liked this song except when Sid Vicious did it. Sung straight, it somehow deprives the appetite of a certain taste we'd like to have on our lips. When Sid Vicious did it, he provided that other side to the song, the certainty, the self-congratulation, the daily heroism of Sinatra's version is completely exploded by this desperate, mad, humorous voice. I can't go around in a raincoat and fedora looking over my life saying I did it my way. For 10 minutes in some American bar over a gin and tonic, you might be able to get away with it. But Sid Vicious's rendition takes in everybody. Everybody's messed up like that. Everybody is the mad hero of his own drama. It explodes the whole culture this self-presentation can take place in. So it completes the song for me. I thought that was a very nice and apt comment by Leonard.
Oh, yeah. He's just great, Leonard Cohen. It's fabulous to share a surname with him. Often people confuse me.
And the change of words, of course. He does a good job of it. If ever, you like
it. And it's very discordant. So it will serve the purpose. People will say, oh, Jesus, let's go.
And then there's the whole, all the strings come in as well later on in this song. It becomes a quite bombastic thing. It's definitely the sign to go home. Yeah.
All right, so then my second song is, and this is just a fantastic coincidence, it's also called Closing Time. Oh. And it's, so once again, the message is in the lyrics. Let's listen.
Closing time, turn all of the lights on over every boy and every girl. Closing time. one last call for alcohol, so finish your whiskey or beer. Closing time, you don't have to go home, but you can't.
So this was Closing Time by Semisonic. And I really like the song. I think people will get the message. Semisonic wasn't a very well-known band, of course. This was their one hit. But the writer of Semisonic, Daniel Wilson, has gone on to be the most incredible songwriter. And his name comes up all over the place. It's just extraordinary. Adele's first big song, Someone Like You, he was the co-writer on that. He's a co-writer on the Chris Stapleton song called White Horse, which is currently at the top of the country charts. He's written
just kicked out by Beyoncé.
Yeah, that's right. And he's written for Beyoncé and for
really
Pink and
sounds like indie rock, doesn't it?
Yeah, and but the reason, one of the reasons why I chose the song was that it does have an annoying quality. It was actually placed at number 19 on Rolling Stone's 2007 list of the 20 most annoying songs. And the reason was that it was just impossibly hooky, the reviewer said. Very typical of Rolling Stone's. But actually, it's quite a deep song in some ways and has a great backstory because he wrote it while his wife was pregnant. And he spent quite a lot of time in hospital. Their baby was born prematurely. And he was break away a little bit and go to the studio. And the day that he got out, he says, or the day that he and his wife took their baby home, while they were in the ambulance, the song came on the radio. The song was released that day. And the driver of the ambulance said, I just love the song. It's a new song. And he said, yeah, that's my song. And the closing time was the every new beginning comes from some other beginning's end. Yeah. It was really about becoming a father. They started off writing a song that they would, you know, play as their last song in their gigs, but it took on a second meaning. Anyway, great song.
Yeah, it's a lovely song.
Yeah. So now we are in the disco, right? And this is
Now we're in the restaurant.
Now we're in the restaurant. Okay.
Sex Pistols.
Sure about
disco.
That.
You can use it whichever way you want. But it's either the disco or the rest or the nightclub.
Okay. Yeah, I'll tell you why I think it's the disco, but you're allowed your choices too, since
it's more like a cocktail bar, I would say.
Okay, let's listen.
You can dance every dance with the guy who gives you the eye, let him hold you tight. You can smile every smile for the man who held your hand neath the pale moonlight. But don't forget who's taking you home and in whose arms you're gonna be.
All right, so well, that tells the story. This is the last dance. Thank you very much. That's why I thought it was about the disco, because, you
well,
know,
a nightclub, it could be, you're right, perhaps. But anyway, you're not going to play the Sex Pistols in a restaurant. But maybe the Sex Pistols could have played in a bar. My way.
Okay.
Closing
all
time
right.
For the bar. And this is the nightclub.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right. The Drifters, huh? A song from 1960. When you make this program, you learn a lot. Because I knew the song, obviously. But I thought it's a good way to end an evening. We play that song, Save the Last Dance for Me. And then you do some research into the song, and it turns out, like your song, there's a whole history attached to it. So can I read you again a bit about the guy who wrote the song, who called himself Doc Pomus, P-O-M-U-S. Anyway, so here's the story. I think it's from the Financial Times or something. Doc Pomus contracted polio as a child, had to walk on crutches before eventually being confined to a wheelchair in midlife. Pomus, who was born Jerome Felder in New York in 1925, was a larger-than-life character. He refused to be restricted by others' perception of his disability, pursuing as a young man the attentions of attractive women and a career as a blues singer. Hence the name change to the more bluesy Doc Pomus. Yet behind the romantic charm of Save the Last Dance lies the hidden regret and yearning he felt about his disability. which was encapsulated on one memorable day. The song is about a man telling his sweetheart to enjoy dancing the night away with other men, so long as she saves the last one for him. It was inspired by Pomus's wedding to the actress Willie Burke in 1957. At the reception, he sat and watched his beautiful bride dance with other men, including Raoul, his brother. Oh, I know that the music's fine, like sparkling wine, and have your fun, but the final verse hints at jealousy. If he asks you if you're all alone, can he walk you home? You must tell him no. So this song ended up the top of the charts in the United States and number two in the UK. And I think there are about 300 versions of it by now. So some of the more famous people who've recorded it are Jerry Lee Lewis, Ike and Tina Turner. It also features in the Beatles documentary Get Back. I can't remember that, to be honest. Harry Nilsson did not a very good version. Emmylou Harris did a country version. Nancy Sinatra and Lee Hazlewood did a version. Bruce Springsteen did a version. And of course, the person we all love, Leonard Cohen did a version. It's on the Live in Dublin LP. And the one thing, it has a sad ending because the song's romance did not secure Pomus' marriage. He and Willie divorced in 1966. And after that, he turned into a professional gambler. And that career ended when he was reportedly robbed at gunpoint. So then he returned to songwriting with the likes of Dr. John, Willie DeVille, and B.B. King. So that's Doc Pomus for you. And what a great song. And what a great story.
Yeah, no, it's such a beautiful song. Did his bride end up going out with his brother?
No, I don't think so. But it only lasted like 9 years, the marriage. Yeah.
What would worry me about that song would be it's such a danceable song. You know what I mean? Wouldn't you dance it and say, oh, just one more?
One more.
Yes. It's a very pretty song.
I do remember that in discotheques when I was young, and these things were still called discotheques, they're called clubs now and stuff, but they used to always end with a quiet song. Yeah, and yeah, yeah, yeah. It was for those pairs who had formed during the evening.
Sort of together.
Maybe
clinch the deal,
together.
As they say.
Clinch the deal, yeah. But what I also didn't know is that Benny King was the singer of the Drifters.
Oh, okay. I didn't know.
So I learned a lot tonight.
Oh, excellent. I'm going to go rush off and listen to the Leonard Cohen version. My last song, and you'll be happy to hear this, Fred, is...
Let me
is
guess the title.
Go ahead.
Might be Closing Time?
No, it's not. Ha!
Oh.
It's this.
Now it's closing time. Off a drink, I'll have another stout. Well, I turn around to look at you. You know what to be found.
The song is I Hope I Don't Fall in Love with You. And I think it's an interesting, smart, beautiful song. But it does, in fact, come off the album Closing Time, and it does include, as you heard, the lyric Closing Time. So I think you get the idea.
Is it Tom Waits?
Tom Waits. Sorry, I should have said.
When he still had his voice like you and I.
Yeah, this was his debut album, which, as I mentioned, is called Closing Time. And I just thought it's a sad song about... But a familiar song and typical of Tom Waits is a barroom scene, somebody who sits the whole night sipping his beer, notices an attractive woman whose partner up and leaves and she's still there. And then he finally summons up the courage to go and talk to her and then turns around and she's gone already. And I love that the kind of narrative play is just fantastic, and to have this on your debut album is just amazing.
Those were beatnik days, right?
Yeah, that's right. One critic, I think I wouldn't be surprised if it was from Rolling Stone, said the songs are a boozier version of Randy Newman and are at once sardonic, vulnerable, and emotionally charged. I think that sort of captures it quite nicely.
I like the old one. Yeah.
But I think it would get the message across pretty clearly.
I think in that respect, all our songs succeeded.
Yes, no, exactly. This is very difficult to choose because any single one of these songs would work.
I would say if the idea is to clear the place,
right.
I think Neubauer wins head on. No matter where you are, if they play that song, it's like time to go, darling. If you want to get into the feeling of, guys, this is the last round kind of thing, yeah. It's going to be much harder.
Yeah, exactly. I think this is the problem. The problem is not only that you want everybody to leave, but you want people to leave and leave happily and willingly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's actually, I think it's too easy to just play some kind
of... Yeah, you could have chosen anything for Metallica or something, but also do the job.
Yeah, exactly. Of my songs, I would kick out the semisonic song because I think it's not really about closing time. It's got the title, but it doesn't have the message, I would say. Yeah.
Well, mine, I would kick out Neubauer because, as you said, any noise can do. I thought this will do the job no matter what. There's no dispute that this will work.
Yes.
But okay, then we kick out, and I would kick out the Pistols as well.
I would kick out the Pistols, except if it was in a bar, because I think actually it'd be quite a good song for a kicking song people out of a bar. I know that you wanted it to be kicking songs out of a disco, but maybe we should go for the Leonard Cohen song, because Leonard Cohen comes up in so many of our topics.
That's what I thought as well, yeah. Although I'm not a huge fan of Cohen, but because my preference would have been Save the Last Dance. But I'm happy to go with Cohen. He sums the situation up very neatly.
Yes.
Although I think if you have people staying in your house for a late night supper too much, I don't think Cohen will get rid of them, but it's fine.
I'll tell you what, why don't we do this? Why don't we have Save the Last Dance if you're in a discotheque and Leonard Cohen's Closing Time if you're in a house and Tom Waits' Closing Time song if you're in a bar? Because how does that sound? Is that too compromising for you?
Yeah, it's a bit. No, I think we should stick to one song.
Okay, all right. Then Leonard Cohen.
Let's Cohen. It will be
precisely as we mentioned.
Because we are such
good enough. That
choosers.
Was as yes. That's interest as usual. We come to a conclusion. Whether it's the best one, please do let us know. Tell us what songs we should have played that we didn't. We are obviously keen to hear from everybody. Our email is perfectsong4@gmail.com. And we are on Apple Music and on Spotify.
On Facebook and on Instagram.
And Instagram as well. We're all over the place.
And Spotify, cool. We have the playlists.
Yeah. So each one of our episodes, we have the complete version of all of the songs. So Fred, what's happening next week?
Next week, you're in for a special treat. We're going to have a special guest. And
okay.
We won't divulge who that is, nor what the subject will be. So you have to tune in next week and you will find out.
Okay. Cool. Nice chat as always. Look after yourself, Fred. I hope your cold gets better that it's not your... Closing time.
No, yes. Okay, Tim. Bye-bye.
Cheers.
And every drinker, every dancer lives a happy feast to thank her. The fiddle, something so sublime. All the women tear their blouses off and the men they dance on the polka dots. And his partner found and his partner lost and it's held to pay when the fiddler stops. Closing time. Closing time. Yeah. Women tear their blouses off and the men they dance on the floor.